Welcome to The Art of Authenticity, a weekly podcast that explores what it really means to be authentic and build a life that's truly you, featuring in-depth interviews with successful business leaders, entrepreneurs, authors, and thinkers. By sharing their stories, daily practices, and habits, they will help you find a life that is successful and authentic. I'm your host, Laura Coe, author, entrepreneur, and coach. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. Today we have Curtis Wong. He is the senior editor of Gay Voices at the Huffington Post. Today's episode, Curtis talks about what he has seen change over the last 5 years and the media's representation of the LGBT community, specifically in marriage equality and how one defines their sexuality. And that really brings up the questions facing this community. For example, now that marriage equality is an option, what do you want to do with that right? As someone who's at the front line of this quickly moving discussion, Curtis gives us insight into what he believes is to come. And of course, like all of our guests, he talks about what an authentic life means to him and his work. I hope you enjoy the show. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and write a review. Thanks so much for listening. Hi, we have Curtis Wong here from the Huffington Post. Welcome to the show, Curtis.
Hi there. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm very excited to talk to you today because, you know, part of the show is bringing on New York Times bestselling authors and intellectuals and business leaders. But I think you bring a very unique and interesting perspective to the show. My understanding is that, you know, in the Huffington Post, you're the senior editor for the Queer Voices, and that there are several people who are editors within the HuffPo. Maybe you could give us a little explanation about your role, the different types of people within the HuffPo, and specifically what, you know, you've been seeing in your area and what you've been finding most interesting lately.
Okay, I guess to start off, I'll go back. You know, I've now been with the Huffington Post for a little over 5 years. It will be 6 years in 2016. I started off on the world vertical and was a intern there, then an assistant editor there for a short amount of time. And, you know, I found myself always drawn to sort of the queer narrative and the LGBT narrative, whether that be in culture and in music and in entertainment or, you know, political as well. So when Queer Voices launched as Gay Voices in 2011, I knew I wanted to be a part of it. We launched in 2011 with just me and my editor, Noah, who is now the executive editor of Huffington Post Queer Voices. I guess about a little over 2 years ago, we added a assistant editor who's now our deputy editor, James Michael Nichols. Sort of the way that we work together as a team, Noah tends to be the more political minded, the person that who's going to stick his neck out as far as issues are concerned. James Michael tends to be like really in touch with what's going on the underground, whether that be in fashion and in music and arts. And for me, I like to think of myself as the cultural guy. I'm always very interested in what's going on Broadway or what's going on in pop music and, you know, what's going on sort of at a very sort of mass pop cultural level. And it's great because we all get to sort of balance each other out and work together collectively as a team.
So one question for you, because, you know, it's so easy to take for granted where we are today at the end of 2015 in the world of marriage equality and gay and lesbian voice. But 2011, it doesn't seem like that long ago. And yet so much has changed. When you guys were launching, was there concern about whether this would be accepted, adopted? What were your thoughts at the beginning?
I mean, it was really exciting. So I guess I was mostly excited above all else because we were the first mainstream online news outlet to have a section with gay in the title.
Is that right?
That's right. And, you know, obviously there were things like, you know, Out Magazine and The Advocate, which are great publications and continue to be great publications, but they, you know, were very focused on sort of the LGBT audience. The exciting thing for us is that we were able to sort of bring a lot of the stories that you would normally find in a queer media space and bring them to a larger audience under the Huffington Post banner. So that was, you know, above all, I was mostly very, very excited.
That's incredible. I had no idea that it was the first one.
And now you see, and now we have things like BuzzFeed LGBT, which is terrific if you haven't checked that out. And then Slate also has an LGBT section. I think it's called Outward, if I'm not mistaken. And they're both, you know, terrific sites that put out a lot of great content. I'm a big fan of a lot of their writers, but I'm also, you know, very proud to say that we were the first.
And what was the response? Were people excited? Was it a growth curve? How did it go in the first 6 months?
I think, you know, you really summed it up quite neatly in saying it was a growth curve. And I think it continues to be a growth curve because certainly the LGBT audience was excited to see their stories told. But I, you know, we're always aware that it is the language around LGBT issues is always evolving. So, you know, we've always strived to be as inclusive as possible. But, you know, even from the get-go, so there was some criticism that whether or not quote-unquote gay was considered inclusive enough. You know, we get tons of fan mail. We still get tons of hate mail at the same time, too. You know, whether that be the issue itself or just sort of, you know, where a particular story lives and so on. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but.
Yeah, no, it does. And, you know, when you say you didn't feel it was maybe as inclusive enough, who were you concerned was feeling excluded?
You know, certainly the transgender community, which has in that short amount of time has come a lot more to the forefront than it had been. But we knew, you know, we were concerned about going into it that they wouldn't feel necessarily part of it. I would say the term gay in and of itself, people assume that it refers only to men from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while it has, you know, other groups have fallen under that banner over time, like especially now in 2015, when we use the term gay, some people might say that it even excludes lesbians. So yeah. But I think that universally, it is sort of a universally understood term that, you know, translates across borders. And I think that's why it was selected at the time.
And so you've made some decisions recently to change that to Queer Voices. What was the decision process to make that change?
You know, I think it was interesting, you know, as my journey with Gay Voices has continued, I guess. I've come to understand that there are segments of the LGBT community that they themselves don't identify as quote unquote gay. Even in a more inclusive phrase like LGBT, there are segments of the, you know, there are communities that don't fall under that banner, whether they're, you know, asexual, pansexual, yeah, and so on. Mm-hmm. And so like rather than, you know, making the masthead include an alphabet, we felt that queer, though it is still somewhat of a controversial term, like was really the most inclusive term that we could have used and still a very powerful word.
So you've been doing this for several years, and I'm curious, in the last 6 months with Caitlyn Jenner and a lot of these subjects have been pushed to the front of people's minds through, I think, you know, in large part, her public profile. What have you seen in your space, in the cultural space? What are the shifts or trends, anything that, you know, you're particularly focused on right now?
You know, one of the things, not really pertaining so much to Caitlyn Jenner per se, but one of the things that I've seen culture, whether that be pop culture or otherwise, sort of trying to grapple with is the question of what lies beyond marriage equality. Mm. Marriage equality was such a great milestone for the community and, you know, should definitely be celebrated. But now I feel like there's this question of whether or not, now that there is the right to marry, are sort of like younger queer people going to feel the same pressure that heterosexual people do to sort of pair up at a certain age? I find that's a very interesting question, you know, whether that will happen in the future. And then also, like, you know, for a lot of LGBT people of many different generations, there's this question of like, okay, now that we have the same rights as our, you know, heterosexual counterparts, do we want to make that choice? Do we want to be in committed relationships? Do we want to have monogamous relationships and sort of have the picket fence and so on and so forth?
Yeah. It really does bring the question, right? Like for a long time when you're not accepted into the system, it's an obvious problem. But once you are, it does put you in the same big predicament that I think a lot of heterosexual people face. You know, am I ready for marriage? Am I ready to walk down the aisle? Am I ready to really commit? It's a legal contract. You know, what does that mean? And it's a very important and big decision to make in your life.
And, you know, this is sort of trite to say this, but, you know, the LGBT community hasn't really had that sort of Lucy and Ricky or like Donna Reed sort of like model to go by.
Yeah.
You know, like, whereas, you know, the heterosexual community, like they think, okay, like, you know, man and woman get together, buy a house, has a picket fence, have two kids, whatever. You know, like there's not that sort of like cultural model for yes. anyone who's queer. And it's sort of like, okay, so where do we define ourselves moving forward now? Do we want, yeah, as you said, do we want to be, to walk down the aisle? Do we not want to walk down the aisle? Do, you know, do we want to have sort of polyamorous relationships? I mean, there's all sorts of different questions.
It's a really fascinating question, which I haven't actually heard. I think another one that I've heard in, you know, in my circles is, you know, after you've been with somebody, because marriage wasn't an option for so many people, and you've been with somebody for 20 years, is it really necessary anymore to go through that process? You've been together, you're quote unquote married, right? you know, a lot of people are questioning whether they actually at that stage of life want to start up with the marriage conversation. Well, I think it's a great conversation and very interesting, and I'm excited to see where it goes. And so any other areas of the cultural space that are popping up that we're going to hear about?
I mean, are we talking pop culture or what are we talking?
I don't know. Anything that you find super fun and exciting?
Certainly, there's been a lot of great things happening on Broadway around the gay conversation. I don't know if you've heard of a little show called Fun Home, the musical, which is really, really terrific. I got to see that show when it was sort of developing off Broadway, and then to see it come to Broadway and then, you know, win a slew of Tonys was, for me, as somebody who follows Broadway a lot, a big milestone.
What about it made it a milestone?
It took the sort of the queer experience and made it universal in a way that I personally had never seen done in a musical format before.
Interesting.
For those of you who haven't seen it, that's something that I recommend to all of my friends and anyone who comes to New York and wants to experience some great theater that they go see.
Fantastic. That sounds great. I would definitely love to see that. I had not heard of it before.
Just 2 weeks ago, I got a chance to see Carol in the movie theaters. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, wow. That's Cate Blanchett does an incredible performance as a lesbian character living in the early 1950s.
Yes, I'm excited to see it. I haven't. You've seen it already?
I have. Yeah. And it is superb. I mean, the performances are terrific. I mean, you really, both her and Rooney Mara have created such empathy for these characters. And I, you know, as somebody who has always been a fan of queer cinema, to see it sort of take on a more nuanced approach with films like that, and, you know, going back 10 years now to Brokeback Mountain and things like that, I'm like, wow, you know, like it really feels like things are at a new level of quality and a new level of characterization and so on.
Yeah. I think it's really exciting to see the shift from introducing the subject of people who are in gay relationships to actually telling their stories in a more normalized way.
Mm-hmm. And that also not being so necessarily hung up on specific issues, like, for instance, whether that be coming out or sort of, you know, accepting him or herself. Like, those are still very, very important issues. But I think that it's good to see that, you know, as a culture, we've sort of moved a little bit beyond that as far as the discussion is concerned. And it's good to see Hollywood and theater and music sort of reflective of that.
Absolutely. And I think so many great artists have taken a big risk in changing the dialogue. Mm-hmm. Macklemore is a big fan of mine in that way.
Oh, yeah, he's fantastic. And like, especially, you know, as somebody who is looking outside of his own experience and sort of embracing the queer community, I think that's cool.
Very, very much so. So this podcast ultimately is talking to people who have successful lives. You are, you know, senior editor at a major publication, but often success without authenticity is really what this podcast is about. So if you could tell us a little bit about what an authentic life means to you, what does it mean for you to really live truly as yourself? You know, we have success, we have money, we have finances, we have relationships, and things might look good from the outside. But what does it mean to navigate a life that also feels good? You know, what does that mean to you? How do you define a life that not only looks good from the outside, but feels good from the inside? What does authenticity in your own mind look like?
Wow, that's interesting. So I guess for me, it really means doing work that I feel is important and relevant and isn't necessarily measured in monetary terms, I guess. You know, for me, you know, sort of growing up, I always knew that I was gay. I always knew that writing was a skill that I had and I had always enjoyed doing. Mm-hmm. So I guess for me, like on the professional side, I sort of sought a path that would sort of put both of those attributes to use. And what's interesting is that like you know, when I was growing up, these things sort of set me apart from the crowd. Mm-hmm. And now I'm able to sort of use the things that set me apart in my professional life, which is something that I didn't think that I ever would do, but I'm very happy that I do. And I think that's really important in living authentically.
Yeah, no, I think that that pretty much defines it. I mean, to say, here's something that set me apart, and instead of trying to bury those qualities, right? The culture mm-hmm. often helps us to push the very fundamental parts that make us who we are mm-hmm. down or aside or hide them or feel ashamed of them or try to make them otherwise. You actually brought to the forefront, despite the fact that they might not be in the average 50% mainstream culture, and make a whole career out of it. That's, to me, that couldn't be more authentic. Ultimately, right, I feel like that's what makes people feel good in their lives, right? I would assume that that's made your career very enjoyable to you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, like to know that, and you know, also to see the impact that it has, like, you know, to see, you know, like whether, you know, when a reader responds to a particular piece or they, you know, like they sound, they feel very passionate about a particular news story. It's so exciting to know that I have at least been a part of that conversation in some way. And it was interesting because, you know, like growing up, I would say I was never like bullied to any extreme level that, you know, I've heard other stories, other cases reflect. But I, you know, like I was not very proud of myself growing up, and I didn't feel proud of my whether that be my family background or my own sexuality. Like I would say probably until my mid-20s or so. Mm. So now to be able to stand proudly and to sort of generate conversation around that has been a very exciting and challenging for me too.
That's fantastic though. I mean, good for you. That's I think this is the thing that we often cave around, and then mm-hmm. we wake up 10, 20 years into our life, and whether it's the artist who takes the safer route of banking or the banker that says, you know what, I should be a social entrepreneur. I mean, I've been meeting young entrepreneurs lately who actually love investment banking or consulting, and these things have kind of gone out of fashion for 20-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, no, I've got to go to another third world country and create a business that helps people in need. Meanwhile, that's just not what they're organized around. So I think, again, it's so great to follow the path that really speaks to you.
And I also think like with authenticity, I think that it's, God, this sounds sort of corny, but it's something that's always, you know, evolving within me. Like, you know, where I was growing and changing as people, our idea of an authentic life is always changing. And I think that to find sort of a place within yourself where you can grow and change personally and professionally and have your idea of quote unquote an authentic life always be changing is also very important. It's not like a stagnant goal.
Absolutely. I mean, we are evolving, and I think that's such an incredibly important point. So, I mean, that leads me to my second question. Was your path, it sounds like you knew you loved to write and you like to talk about gay and lesbian and transsexual issues. You've gotten the opportunity to do both, but was there ever a phase where you were living inauthentically, or was your path sort of a bumpy but straight line?
it was not a straight line by any means. I would say, I feel like no one's path should ever be linear. Not entirely anyway. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So basically when I graduated from college back in 2001, I knew that I wanted to work in the journalism field. I didn't necessarily know that LGBT issues would be a part of that. But I think sort of in the earliest stages of my career and in my early 20s, I didn't really know how to sort of market myself. I didn't really even know how to put together like a freelance pitch letter. There was a critical moment in my life that I think has influenced everything that has come beyond it too. So when I was 25, I decided to go abroad to teach English as a second language. So I, after about 4 years of working and not really finding any sort of personal or professional fulfillment, I went abroad. I did teach English in the Czech Republic for about 2.5 years. As a year approached of doing it though, I knew that like I still had this desire to write inside of me. So I started freelancing for a few publications. After freelancing for an English language newspaper there called the Prague Post, they ended up hiring me full-time, and I was able to work full-time as a writer for the next year and a half, sort of my last year and a half living in Europe. And like that to me was like a fundamental experience that I was like, okay, it was sort of a turning point in both personally and professionally, where I really felt a lot more confident in the skills that I had to offer professionally and just also in myself as a person, like knowing that I was able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great that you got that experience early on too, to help
And who knows, there might be another one too. I don't know.
And so, you know, one of the biggest challenges people face in living an authentic life is when things get very stressful and you're making big decisions and fear starts to come along, and it's very easy to make inauthentic decisions, right? We start to create all sorts of narratives about why the thing we really feel heartfelt towards might feel right, but fear and anxiety start to kick in and we choose the safer path. What do you do to manage those moments where you have to make a decision and you're challenged by fears?
Oh, wow. And, you know, you're speaking to a Libra who, I don't know how much, I don't know how much you know about that, but we're notoriously indecisive.
My partner's a Libra, so I do.
Yes. What do I do? I will say one thing. I don't think anyone ever deliberately makes a bad decision. I think it's like, you know, things that may not pan out the way that you want them to, or, you know, there's always that sort of what if thing. But I feel like, at least for me, I always really, really try to make the best decision that I can based on the information that I have at any given point.
Mm-hmm. Do you speak to friends? Do you?
I speak to friends. I speak to my mother. I speak to my boss. I speak to anybody who will listen.
Yeah. No, that's a great thing to stop and get the advice of others and make sure you're not just leaping into something from an insecure place.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, it's like you said, it's not always easy. And there's been, you know, some difficult decisions that I've made that I'll always question, you know, what if, but we have to sort of look at things and like know that you might not always have closure depending on what the circumstances are.
Absolutely. And any choice that we make, whether, you know, we slip up and make an inauthentic one or we make an authentic one and it's going great, you know, we learn and mm-hmm. it doesn't always go well. And I still think it might be a very authentic decision, even when it's going terribly. Like reality might say in this moment, your deep desire for whatever it is that you're putting out there, it's not the time, right? So you have to navigate, pivot, try something different. But it doesn't mean that you're not making great authentic decisions, but sometimes reality loops can be complicated.
And I also think, you know, this is also probably trite to say as well, but I've always tried to come from the mindset of, you know, you usually regret the things you didn't do than the ones that you did do. So I've tried to approach a lot of my own life decisions from that same mindset.
Yes, so, yes.
The worst that could happen is you look back and you think, I shouldn't have done that, you know?
Right. But hopefully you learn something, right? You learn what you don't want to do. And I think that's a really important thing to learn as well.
Exactly.
So do you have any daily practices, tools, apps, meditation, yoga, long walks? Like, what do you do to center yourself and find that inner compass?
I guess about a few years ago, I really discovered bike riding. That's been very helpful to me.
Mm-hmm.
I try to do it probably not every day, especially, you know, going into the winter months, it'll be a bit more of a challenge. But I usually try to do that about probably between 3 to 4 times a week. I found that very helpful. I wouldn't say that I meditate on a specific set basis, but I do consider myself a spiritual person in that regard. So I do it probably as often as I can, maybe mm-hmm. not often enough, but I found that very helpful.
Yeah.
Probably don't get to the gym as much as I would like to, but I found that to be a good source of, you know, sort of to stay focused. It's a nice break from your work pressures, but also, you know, also very productive.
Yeah. Any apps or tools or anything that help you keep from, fraying at the edges with all the crazy pressures we have?
Aside from, you know, lusting after various people's travels on Instagram. Well, gosh, I mean, I really like, Matt My Run or Matt My Ride. I don't know if that's what you're really looking for, but, you know, I do have like a small competitive streak too. So it's good to know, like, what your friends are doing on their bikes too, to keep you challenged, I guess that's the best way.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And you know, there's no right or wrong, right? I think, you know, the fact that you found biking and it's something that brings, you know, some stability and harmony into your life and however you approach it, right? I think that's what's fun about this podcast is learning from so many different people with so many different experiences, what their system is and that there's really a lot of ways to get there.
You know, in my line of work, we tend to have very, very busy days and very action packed days. I always, you know, try to find time for myself, a little time for myself every day, because I think that helps to keep me focused. Because there are times otherwise, like especially around the holidays, where you can feel very overwhelmed. and very like sort of overcommitted too. So it's, you know, and I always joke that overcommitment is a streak that has run through my family and across many, many, many generations. So I'm always trying to sort of fight the urge to do that myself too.
Yeah. That, overcommitment, right? Like people say often it's a wealthy people problems, right? It's just a problem of abundance and not to let that get in the way.
And, you know, also like to remind yourself that it is okay to be selfish sometimes. It is okay, like to say, like, I need this time for myself, as opposed to sort of like being overly concerned with what everyone expects from you and everyone wants from you.
Absolutely. Well, Curtis, I can't thank you enough. You've given us so many great ideas and thoughts and caught us up on what's going on over at HuffPo. If people want to read your articles, find out more, where can they find you in the massive HuffPo world?
Probably the easiest way to find me is on Twitter. I'm at C_Wong, W-O-N-G, 79. That's at C_Wong, 79. You know, that's probably the easiest way you can find me. From there, that will link you directly to my Huffington Post articles. Aside from that, you can check us out at www.huffingtonpost.com/queervoices.
Very nice. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate having you.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. I hope you found some value in this interview. If so, it would mean the world to me if you hit subscribe, completed an iTunes review, or shared it with a friend. Every little bit counts. I'm super grateful for every single one of you, and I couldn't be more excited to be here. Signing off, I'm Laura Koh, and I'll see you guys next week.